From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation or on the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Trilogy Night here on Coast to Coast. Three fascinating guests, three incredible topics. NASA's Space Shuttle Discovery and its seven astronaut crew will likely now have to wait at least one more day to rocket into orbit after a last-minute glitch prevented a Wednesday launch attempt. A leak in the shuttle's external fuel tank kept Discovery from launching spaceward. Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com, and our science advisor. Well, this one was unexpected, Richard.
Yeah, this was kind of something that hasn't happened in ages and ages and ages. It's back during Apollo when they were fueling those huge Saturn V's, and they had, you know, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, which are the two fuels used in the shuttle, are incredibly powerful for chemical fuels. But they're also really hard to work with. I mean, liquid hydrogen is at minus 450 plus degrees below zero Fahrenheit, liquid oxygen around minus 300. So you're dealing with incredibly cold material, incredibly brittle steel valves and piping and all that. And this afternoon, as they were fueling the huge external tank with the liquid hydrogen, they sprang a leak in a dump valve that is designed to relieve the pressure as the hydrogen is filling in the tank because it's so cold and, you know, Florida is so hot right now, some of it boils off. So if they didn't relieve the pressure, it would be like the old steam boilers where they blow up. So this valve is supposed to automatically regulate the pressure, and it can also be done by computer control. And when they used it the first time, it worked fine. When they do it like three or four times during the filling process, which takes a couple hours.
Okay.
But by the end of the filling process, everything is super cold. So you've got brittle valves, brittle seals, brittle pipes, and they had a problem in this valve, and they decided that it was venting too much hydrogen into the environment around the shuttle, which in the worst-case scenario, you could get an explosion, which would be a really bad hair day for everybody involved. So the launch director shut it down and said, we'll just recycle the count. Now, one update to your announcement a moment ago. The shuttle will not leave now until Sunday at the earliest because they literally, I don't think, have the money or the manpower to be the NASA of old. In the NASA of old, back when I was working with the program and covering it for Cronkite, they would have done this between now and tomorrow. Now, because of personnel or they can't find another valve or who knows what, it will be earliest Sunday before they can launch, and that means they're going to lose one of the spacewalks.
Yeah, they're going to lose some windows here, aren't they?
If they delay till Monday, they lose two spacewalks. If they delay till Tuesday, they lose three, and by Wednesday, if they don't launch, they have to wait till April because of the Russian Soyuz coming up and the crew transfers and all that. So there's an end to this runway. And this is a problem NASA right now in this fragile transition. Remember, NASA doesn't have an administrator. There's nobody really running the place under Obama like there was under Bush. Griffin quit, which is the normal procedure. You return your resignation, and if the incoming president doesn't say, no, I want you to stay,
you go.
So there's nobody really running the store. I mean, that's kind of an overstatement because obviously there's professionals. There's the deputy administrator who's acting administrator. But there's nobody directing policy.
Right. There's no figurehead there.
There's no – well, the administrator is more than a figurehead.
No, I know. But, I mean, there's nobody there to set the direction.
And it's because there are big decisions waiting in the wings going on behind the scenes as to what this president is going to do with this space agency, which he just, in these two economic programs, the stimulus package and the omnibus bill, gave $2 billion upgrade to NASA's budget. So now the annual NASA budget, this is kind of cool, tops out at just over $19.5 billion per year.
And speaking of direction, when do you head east?
We head east, Robin and I, to visit the nation's capital in the blush of this new presidency in a couple weeks. At the end of the month in March, I've been invited to do this amazingly interesting 2012 conference, a whisker away from downtown Washington, D.C. Other people there would be Bill Henry and Jay Widener. And the more I'm prepping, because obviously I'm putting a whole bunch of stuff together in PowerPoint, and my thrust of this is, what does Obama know about 2012. And as I got into this, particularly in the last few nights, because I work nights and I listen to you and kind of works well, I'm finding some astonishing things that even I didn't know I knew. I mean, I save things and bury them in files all the time. And when I have a call to do one of these things, I kind of go into the files and I look around, and as I put together the dots to make the picture, to make the narrative, things fall out, and that leads you to the Internet, to Google, and there's amazing things that we have found. So if anybody wants to get a firsthand report on what this administration is going to do with the most interesting problem of our time, is there a problem with 2012 or is there not? It's going to be Obama's watch. Come to D.C. Come to the conference, which is the 28th and 29th of this month in March. If you go to enterprisemission.com, there's a big banner there. You can click on that and get all the info.
How about a phone number for those?
For those who don't have phones, 1-301-608-1924.
Richard, thanks. Give us an update on the shuttle as we progress, as we get into this end of this week. Who knows? You say Sunday. NASA says maybe Friday now, so we'll find out what happens. Richard C. Hoagland. The world population is projected to top 9 billion people in 2050, up from 6.8 billion this year and 7 billion early in 2012, according to UN estimates. The 2008 revision of the official UN population's projections forecasts minimal change in the population of the more developed nations, but in some of the third world nations, they predict an explosion still in population. They're talking about 9 billion people. 2050. Tragedy in Germany. A 17-year-old dressed in military gear killed 15 people in a shooting spree there. Tim Kretschmer began his rampage at a school where he used to be a student. Most of the victims at the school were female, 8 female students, 3 female teachers, 1 male student. After escaping, he was wounded by police, but then they found him dead, so they don't know if he committed suicide or if those wounds killed him. He stole guns from his father, who legally had the right to keep them. And a gunman who killed 10 people and committed suicide in a rampage across Alabama, across that countryside, had struggled to keep a job and left behind a list of employers and co-workers he believed had wronged him. The list found in his home included a metals plant that had forced him to resign years ago. Also on the list was a sausage factory, where he suddenly quit last week, in a poultry plant that suspended his mother. I'll tell you the pressure some people are under when things like this happen. You remember during the days of Saddam Hussein, his henchman, the guy who would always go on television and talk a little bit, Tariq Aziz? Well, for many years, the public face of Saddam Hussein's Iraqi regime, he has now been jailed for 15 years, convicted for his role in the execution of 42 merchants. Could have gotten death, but he did not. Two of Saddam Hussein's half-brothers were also found guilty and sentenced to death by a court in Baghdad. Some of you may know of the word called Tap Out. It's a company, American Business Enterprise, that specializes in producing clothing and miscellaneous gear targeted at the mixed martial arts community, as well as a magazine devoted to mixed martial arts fighting, and also there's a television show out there. Well, Charles Mask Lewis, the co-founder of Tap Out, killed in an automobile accident near Newport Beach, California. A female companion was ejected from the car and taken for medical treatment, but Lewis was pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of a second car, believed to have been traveling alongside Lewis's car, arrested on charges of gross vehicular manslaughter while intoxicated. They thought maybe the two of them might have been racing in the wee hours. Freddie Mac, facing mounting damage from U.S. housing crisis, will ask the government now for $31 billion in additional aid after posting a loss of more than $50 billion last year. The report comes just weeks after Fannie Mae said it would need more than $15 billion in government assistance after losing almost $60 billion last year. When does it end? In a moment, we'll be checking in with Andre Aglachon about this. Ever wonder why those French fries taste so good sometimes when you're depressed? Well, here's a theory. They say now that salt is a natural antidepressant. That might explain why some people have a tendency to over-ingest it. Kim Johnson, a psychologist from the University of Iowa, discovered that when rats were lacking sodium chloride, They did not assume their normal activities, such as eating or playing. So they say on one hand, don't take a lot of salt. It's not good for you. And now they're saying salt is a natural antidepressant. People with type O blood, like I have a much lower risk for pancreatic cancer. With those that have the type of B, they have the worst risk. Researchers said this in a study that may help explain what causes one of the deadliest kinds of cancer. Actor Patrick Swayze has pancreatic cancer. In Niagara Falls, a man has survived a plunge over Niagara Falls, clinging to a log long enough for a private helicopter to create a current that pushed him to safety. Then they got him. Investigators say the victim was semi-conscious when he was rescued, taken to a hospital in Niagara Falls, Canada. The investigators were not yet calling the leap a suicide, but they did say the man entered the water on his own. The remains of a medieval vampire have been discovered among the corpses of a 16th-century plague victim in Venice, according to an Italian archaeologist who did the dig. The body of a woman was found in a mass grave on the Venetian island, suspecting that she might be a vampire then, a common belief at the time. Gravediggers shoved a rock into her skull to prevent her from chewing through her shroud and infecting others with the plague. In the absence of medical science, vampires were just one of the many possible contemporary explanations for the spread of the Venetian plague in 1576, which ran rampant through the city and ultimately killed up to 50,000 people. On the hot stories at coasttocoastam.com, scientists have discovered a highly unusual fish with fangs made of bone. It is called the Dracula fish. The creature is very tiny, has been found in only one area in Burma. You can take a look at the picture at coasttocoastam.com. And a Chinese woman says she's been howling like a wolf for 26 years, but she can't help it. She says that her howls are really sneezes or yawns, but she just can't control it. In a moment, Andre Eglishon joins us. Maybe we can control what's happening financially. Who knows? He'll shed some light for us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Andre Eglishon, expert on the economy, with us this hour. We'll take phone calls a little bit later on with him. Andre, how are you? Welcome back.
George, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure. I'm feeling great.
Since you were on last, the economy hasn't gotten any better, Andre. I don't think there's a perception. Stock market had a little hit yesterday, went up. Today, not much.
And now, I think we're going to continue to see this kind of volatility until there is some light at the end of the tunnel. As a matter of fact, Bloomberg News had to file a lawsuit against the Federal Reserve to try to get some transparency on who has been the recipients of a lot of its loans. The Federal Reserve has printed something like about $11.7 trillion since March of 2008 and injected it into the financial system. And some of the activity that we've seen lately with Citibank, reporting a profit is promising. But I would have to say that we're retooling now, and for hopefully what will be a new round of economic growth in the future.
Absolutely. In your work, Thieves in the Temple, America Under the Federal Reserve System, you took a very close look at the Federal Reserve. Even if we get out of this situation whole, and I think eventually we will, because I think the marketplace may do it on its own, Andre, what are we going to do to prevent it from happening again?
Well, as I said, we're going to have to retool, and I believe that a part of that retooling process is going to have to include common sense regulatory steps to guide our financial system. I think that things got a little bit out of hand since around 1981, and it has progressively become more and more liberal in terms of its approach to the markets. I'm talking about the players in our financial system. And I think it has now come to a head. This country is undergoing what Alan Greenspan called an age of turbulence, wherein the creative destruction forces of capitalism are reshaping our economy forevermore. And this isn't anything new. I mean, at one time, London was the world center of finance, and in the 20th century, New York took that position, and who knows where it may go from here. Asia is on the rise, but I can tell you this. The world is changing, and I don't think that it will be the same. It's changing for some to be worse than for others, but I don't think anybody is going to be unaffected by this crash that we saw last year in our system.
We have Freddie Mac now looking for $30 billion. When does this end, Andre, in terms of these handouts?
Well, I think it will end when the American people begin to demand the kind of transparency that I think we deserve. I found it remarkable that a recent Newsweek poll indicated that majority of Americans now favor bank nationalization, something like 56%. And I think that's really wrong-headed because the banks have not been completely transparent with the American people. Something like two-thirds of the assets that they have seized in several states have yet to be recorded on their books. As I said, the Fed is not being transparent about who has received money that they have auctioned off. So until we get some clarity, I think that it's not going to end. And my biggest gripe about the whole thing is that Congress, the president, and the American people don't really have any say-so over what the monetary scientists are doing, the lion's share of policy that's coming out of New York and Washington to address this economic situation. Money is going into huge institutions, and no one knows where it's going. The Fed says they don't want to add a stigma to those companies. But I think that if the American people are going to be asked to bail out the same players that took their jobs and sent them overseas and allowed business to offshore, I think we deserve to know who the companies are, how much are they getting, what are the lending stipulations, mm-hmm. Will these companies actually be able to pay it back? We just need some light. And then I think this will come to an end.
And the banks need to start lending money to businesses so they can start hiring people again and getting things going and getting this perception that we're in a disaster, and we may be, but the perception is we're definitely in one. And I think people are holding back on buying things when they could be buying things.
Well, a part of the retooling process that I spoke of at the onset, I think, is going to call for the deleveraging of the system. Securitization is going to have to once again increase, but I don't think it is going to run at the same scope that it did over the past several years. I think that the system is going to have to be deleveraged. That means banks are going to be less profitable, I think, in the near term, and they're probably going to lend less. But I do see liquidity beginning to unfreeze probably around the latter half of this year. And I think we're going to have a rally economically in the country, but I'm not sure of how long-lived it will be given the massive amount of money Federal Reserve has added to the money supply. It's bound to have an inflationary effect, and it's going to jeopardize the dollar, and I believe foreign capital coming into the United States will probably be challenging as well once that inflation begins to take hold in the economy sometime probably around the fourth quarter of this year.
Andre, J.P. Morgan, for example, got billions in TARP money, and they invested $1 billion in India. What's going on with the investment in foreign enterprises when they should be taking care of us here?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, because of World Trade Organization rules and the globalization of the financial system and China's ascension to the World Trade Organization in this equation, I think it has pretty much consigned China for right now as the industrial an economic engine of planet Earth going forward into the 21st century. They're about 10 years into their industrialization. They probably have another 10, 15 more. And then we have India, which is building hundreds of nuclear reactors in anticipation for their targeted industrialization, which is just now underway. There are some geopolitical challenges in India with the recent spate of terrorism that we've seen in Mumbai. Once that has been put at bay, I do foresee India as the ultimate destination for a lot of investment, not only by financial interests in the United States, but all over the world.
Andre, what's your website?
It is ustalknetwork.com.
You got it. We'll take calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. Andre Aguilachon, our guest this hour. I'm George Norrie, and back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll start our special trilogy night with Father Andrew Wingate, first of all, and his prophecies. But when we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Andre Aguilachon on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Andre Aguilachon. Andre, do you find that people in your circles, people that you meet, that they're still uptight about all of this?
Yes, I think that the country is very fearful right now, and we're seeing a lot of very disturbing behavior by some Americans. But I like your admonishment for the American people to be patient.
Yes.
And to understand that our economy is a gigantic pendulum, and it swings both ways. We're swinging in the tough economic times right now, but out of the destruction of many industries, we will see the rebirth of some of those industries, and we will see new industries come along. I'm convinced that many Americans that have been born in the last 10 years will probably find jobs 10 years from now in fields that haven't even been invented yet. So I'm very hopeful that our economy will turn around, but it's going to be painful. I just wish that we had more clarity on the obligation that the American taxpayer is having to take on in bailing out so many companies, particularly companies that, in my opinion, were abusive in their role in our economy, and that's my number one gripe.
Why didn't this administration just simply let some of these companies fail or slow down in its approach and say, look, we just came into this. You know, we've been looking at it while the election was underway, while we were campaigning. Now that we're elected, you know, we're going to do the right thing, and we're not going to jump into this. They just seem like they jumped in way too fast.
Well, the reality is, George, I think that the administration has shown some restraint, particularly in the area of bank nationalization. As mm-hmm. I said, 56% of the American people feel that it's a good thing. I think it's crazy,
right,
you know, to buy anything sight unseen. We don't know how toxic these banks really, really are. And that's point number one. Point number two, most of the recovery efforts underway right now are coming out of the Federal Reserve System. And Congress, the President, and the American people really have no say-so over how much money the Fed has printed and pumped into the financial system to address this crisis. By my estimations, it's around $11.7 trillion in the last year.
Man.
I mean, that contrast that to the $1.3 trillion that we've seen come from the government, and the difference is stark.
Let's go to the phones. Mike in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Hey, Mike.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good to have you with us, Michael.
I would just like to say I got a comment and then a question for Andre.
Sure.
I believe that the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, when they robbed our forefathers of our own right to print money and gave it into the private hands of corrupt corporations, totally is the cause of what's happening now, and it's been their plan ever since then for this event to happen. And my question is to Andre, do you really believe that this economy can rebound when our whole infrastructure of manufacturing has been removed and all of our money has been shipped overseas? And do you really think that the dollar could ever become half as strong as it once was? And have you heard of the Amero and the possibility of demonetizing the dollar and changing our currency?
Yeah, a very good question. I had the opportunity to talk with Professor Peter Kennan, and his most recent book, Regional Monetary Integration, explores the successes and failures of regional monetary integration efforts around the world. And I asked him at that time, Professor, when we don't even have the prerequisites in place for regional monetary integration between the United States, Mexico, and Canada, i.e. sustainable trade agreements. NAFTA is unsustainable. We found out how challenging it is going to be to have some address to the American manufacturers and the American people's anxiety over the damage that NAFTA has done to our economy when President Obama went to Canada. And the Buy American provision of the stimulus bill caused the Canadians to bristle. The president at that time said, listen, we will have to abide by WTO rules and NAFTA rules. However, some of the sidebar labor agreements are going to have to be put inside of NAFTA. So it's going to be challenging addressing these trade agreements that have cost us so many jobs. But in answer to your question, I do believe that the dollar's days are numbered. I think it's going to be hyperinflated and destroyed because of the massive amount of money that the Federal Reserve has printed over the last year. And I do think that as soon as we can iron out some of the grievances on the American side, particularly as it relates to the NAFTA Accord, and once they narrow down who exactly is going to control what with this regional monetary dynamic, I think we will see the Amaro.
Oil is creeping up again, Andre. How come?
Well, oil is it's one of the things that you would have thought would have caused Texas to be buoyed. But when oil prices dropped, that state particularly had a bad problem. But what we've seen is we've seen a tremendous reduction in demand. And I do think that ultimately, with India coming online and with China faring relatively better than the United States in this global economic downturn, we do have expectations of high oil prices again. When, I couldn't tell you, but I think it's a foregone conclusion when you look at the fact that they're building a city in China a month, and India hasn't even gotten started yet. I think it's a safe bet that energy prices across the energy spectrum, not only oil, natural gas, uranium, oil, you name it. I think it's going to be a very handsome sector of our markets.
Let's go to Robin in Oakland, California. Hi, Robin. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. And, George, if I could just take 2 seconds to, well, I wanted to say the more I hear you, the more I love you. But actually, what I did want to say very quickly, and forgive me, Andre, I'll be right there, is that you have, I don't know what to say, but you've just evolved enormously. You're spiritually just awesome. So it's been it's a pleasure to listen to you. It really is. Andre, I have a question for you, and my question is this. In the past, every time that America has gone through some terrible and dreadful financial debacle, we have had a leader who has somehow named what were, you know, the rebuilding with the FDR. It was, you know, the WPA, and with Lyndon Johnson, it was the Great Society. And we don't have any name. It's like we're giving money to this bank and giving money to that bank, and nobody's being held accountable. And we don't have anything. You used a term just a little while ago called the retooling of America. And I'm going, that's it. That's a good one. You know, do you think that having a name like revivifying, no, that's too complicated, but reviving America or retooling America or some kind of a name for this enormous rebuilding that we're going through, do you think that that would help reassure people and calm us down? Because it just seems like we're going so fast, we're scattered in all kinds of different directions.
Yes, you know, the American people don't do nuance very well. Bumper sticker-like phrases and slogans are are very inspirational. And I think that any tool that can be utilized to help maintain confidence in a system which is so fundamentally destabilized now, it would be welcomed, I'm sure, by this administration and by the American people. But I think in the final analysis, we're going to have to understand that the schism in our financial system right now is in fact nuanced. And it's going to take the American people to have a far more global understanding if we ever plan on sitting on our front porches and smoking the pipe and watching the grandkids play in the yard in retirement. The alternative is that we'll end up working forever. So we're going to have to understand, you know, that the world has gone global. The financial center, in the aftermath of this, may not necessarily be New York. And we've seen a lot of carnage come out of New York that is spread across the country. Into Detroit, the Sun Belt, and elsewhere around the country. And we're going to see a new world order emerge after this is over.
Sounds like this is what they wanted, though, Andre, all along.
Exactly.
Yep. Thanks, Robin. Let's go to Steve in Berry Creek, California, on the wild card line. Steve, go.
Oh, thank you very much, George. Hi,
sure.
Andre.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, thanks. I wanted to ask if you thought that you know, there could be some kind of conspiracy within it all in order to, you know, maybe do like a Cold War effect with the rest of the world. Like, in other words, you know, we're having all this inflation and stuff, but the rest of the world is following behind us, you know. If something goes wrong here, they might prosper a little bit, then things start going wrong there. So you think we're trying to, like, you know, smoke some people out of a bush or some, you know, whatever,
all right,
enemies, whatever it may be or something. Or
was this done by design, Andre?
I think so, to a large extent. Once China was allowed to fully ascend to the World Trade Organization, the Economist said that it was the biggest coming out party in the history of capitalism. You have a huge population. You have a region of the world wherein the diffusion of cultural elements, both the material elements and the non-material elements of the core society, being Europe, were diffused into China at a rate, pace, and sequence so as to exploit China's economic development. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. China is consuming about 25% of the world's aluminum, 27% of the world's steel, 31% of all the concrete we can produce on Earth, and the vast majority of petroleum resources out of the Middle East. The whole world has staked its financial future on China's industrial growth. And at the same time, I think that the plan for the United States has been to bring the country down at the same time as we bring these emerging economies up. Prior to this financial crisis, when you looked at the fiscal landscape of the globe, and you're a globalist, you saw America as the largest regulatory lump. That had to be whittled down, and I think that's what we have seen.
Let's go next to Patrick in Billings, Montana, west of the Rockies. Patrick, take it away.
Yeah, I'd like a question to Andre.
Sure.
Is more along the a biblical line, and that's let's say that the Federal Reserve was the Bank of Babylon,
mm-hmm.
and they've moved us into a paper currency and now into an electronic currency, which has no way of even, people can't even follow it. There's a movie out with Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones about just bankers being fooled by electronic banking.
Mm-hmm.
So if we wanted to challenge the Bank of Babylon, we would go to a 25% bullion-backed dollar in America. And would that straighten out our financial situation?
Well, the problem is we have never fully audited Fort Knox. And all the economists that I've talked to have indicated that if the dollar were fully backed by gold, it would run gold prices up to over $40,000 an ounce. So I don't think they want that to happen. Sadly, though, every country that has experimented with fiat currency has always seen that the value of that currency degenerate to zero. Every country that has experimented with a privately owned central bank have also experienced problems. This is our fourth failed experiment with a privately owned central bank here in the United States. I do think that we have to restore the mandates of the Constitution. And at the very least, if they're not going to phase out the Federal Reserve System, demand that the Fed not supersede its original charter and begin to lend money to institutions and individuals outside of the banking system, which is exactly what their TALF program calls for. They're lending out $1 trillion. The Treasury Department has to jack up $100 billion to guarantee any Fed's losses, and you have a whole line of investors, we don't even know who they are, that are lined up to receive $1 trillion in new loans coming out of the Federal Reserve to buy the toxic assets off of the bank's books. And here's the kicker. They're not required to put up virtually anything in collateral. Every $1,000 they borrow from the Fed, they're only required to put up $50. So in this way, with them not having any skin in the game, if their hedge funds go belly up, they can simply walk away and not suffer any loss, and the American taxpayers are left holding the bag. So fiat money and a privately owned central bank have always been a recipe for disaster.
Let's go to New York now. John, you've been waiting. Go ahead, John.
George, thanks.
Sure.
The AIG debacle that just happened in New York, largest insurance company there is, shows the largest corporate loss in the history of the United States. At the same time, Andre, credit default swaps continue to go on. Selling the toxic assets that you've been talking about for the last 15 minutes as insurance products and selling them. Who's letting AIG do that? Goldman Sachs. In this state of New York, there's only been one person, and that's the ex-governor, Eliot Spitzer, when he was Attorney General of New York, took these Wall Street characters that did these credit default swaps to court and won. You've answered all the questions correctly except for one. We're doing credit default swaps. AIG shows the largest corporate loss in the history of the country, and no one has prosecuted anybody on Wall Street for illegal activities.
I just mentioned just a few days ago, Andrew, why is that company being untouched and getting billions of dollars in continual bailout money?
You've raised a very, very important and accurate assessment of your point. No question about it. These credit default swaps are a bird's nest of unimaginable proportion. You're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of around $650 to $675 trillion in credit default swaps. That's 10 times the GDP of planet Earth. I don't see how that can be undone. I don't want to see that burden added to the American taxpayers, and why we have not demanded accountability from AIG or from the Federal Reserve is beyond me. You know, the American people have given up its economic sovereignty by allowing the outsourcing of so much of the financial regulatory activity in this country. It's crazy. It's lunacy.
It's criminal.
The people have no control. I agree. It's criminal.
Where do we get the works, Thieves in the Temple, and Where the Right Went Wrong on National Security and the Left Too?
You can order those from Amazon.com, or you can go to MilliganBooks.com, or you can go to USTalkNetwork.com. And I'm offering a special for my listeners who listen to me at ustalknetwork.com, and I can ship the book to you with no shipping costs.
Very good. ustalknetwork.com. Also, I have a toll-free number for ordering. If anyone wants it, it's 877-962-6657. Andre, I'll see you next time.
Thank you, George.
Andre Eglashon. Now, when I come right back, we'll start with the prophecies of Father Andrew Wingate, and who knows what the good father will say, but get ready. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Just send it my way. Trilogy night, three special guests, three incredible topics.